Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast, coming from Dallas, Texas, Los Angeles, and Sacramento, California. Here's Skylar Teo, Aaron Alvarado, and David Stauffer.
Welcome to the Brave Little Podcast. Joining me, as usual, Mr. Aaron Alvarado in Los Angeles, California. How you doing, man?
Doing pretty well. It's a chilly 53 degrees today.
Ooh, 53.
It almost feels like winter.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was the high of today?
That was the high.
Wow. Sacramento, we got into the 60s at least. So
okay.
You know, respects to the people, you know, on the East Coast right now who are, from what I understand, suffering from catastrophically low temperatures.
What's the term they're using for the storm? I can't remember.
I don't even know.
Oh, it has a really cool name too.
Does it?
Yeah. It'll come to me in a second. I'll remember it.
Okay. Well,
yeah. I'll just blurt it out. That's what I do.
Speaking of storms. That's actually a terrible saying. what I was going to say was over the holidays, it's one of my favorite times to just consume content. Whether that's in the theaters, on Netflix, whatever. I tried to write down everything that I watched, whether streamed or in theaters, throughout the Christmas and New Year holiday, both stuff that I wanted to watch as well as stuff that you recommended. And I have a pretty lengthy list of stuff. I'll just rifle through it right now. I watched a documentary called The Work about Folsom Prison, something we'll talk about in actually an episode just after this. The movie Good Time, which you had been pushing on me and recommending heavily. Also, what we're going to review in our next episode. It's Robert Pattinson of Twilight fame. The new Black Mirror dropped. I watched a couple episodes, mm-hmm. I think three episodes of that, actually. The aforementioned Bright with Will Smith and friend of the pod, Joel Edgerton. Wormwood from our favorite documentarian, Errol Morris. The Greatest Showman, I watched, which is a musical, didn't know that. Jumanji, Jumanji with The Rock, which had every reason to be bad, but yet I actually enjoyed the heck out of it. Just a solid popcorn cinema. I say that now because there's no way we're going to be doing a whole episode on it, because I don't think I'm getting you to the theater to watch that one.
No, probably not.
Surprisingly good, like entertaining.
Yeah. I have a good friend that worked on it, and even for him, I won't go watch it.
So. Yeah. He did CGI.
Sorry,
work
Eric.
For it?
Oh, yeah, Eric. Yeah. Yeah.
And then I watched The Florida Project, and All the Money in the World, and then of course Star Wars like five more times. I think I've seen it six times total now. So, anyway, what did you watch?
A lot of the same stuff, actually. I saw Bright. I saw like about half of Wormwood. Haven't finished that. Mm. Part of Black Mirror. Not the biggest fan of this new season, but okay. I also saw The Florida Project, I, Tanya. I saw Lost City of Z, a little movie called Columbus.
Oh.
I saw Good Time, and I also saw The Work.
Is I, Tanya good?
It's pretty good. It's okay. Not great. It's entertaining. It okay. keeps your attention. It's a little long for me.
Yeah.
So I didn't know the actor that plays her husband in this movie is the guy that plays Bucky in the Avengers.
Oh, Sebastian Stan.
Sebastian. Yeah, that's him.
That's right.
And in this movie, he has a nice upper lip stash.
Oh.
It's furry. It looks good. Looks like a caterpillar.
I'm fine.
So yeah, I didn't recognize him at all. Yeah, I didn't recognize him at all. He did a really great job. So.
Yeah, actually, I've been hearing that. Both him and Margot Robbie have been excellent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was okay. Not a great movie. I probably wouldn't recommend it. But
well, we are here to not talk about just okay movies. We're actually here to talk about the worst movies that we saw in 2017. And then after which, we will review The Disaster Artist with James Franco, which is a movie about the Citizen Kane of bad movies, The Room. Happy that, by the way, just spoiler alert, The Disaster Artist is not on my list of worst films. It might be on my list of best. You'll have to wait and see at our next pod when we do the top 10. I guess two pods from now.
Coming soon.
But was this a hard list for you to come up with?
It kind of was, actually. I did see a lot of bad stuff this year, but there wasn't a lot of exemplary bad stuff. Mm. It was just the typical bad stuff. A lot of comic book movies that I didn't like. But I was able to parse the list and come up with five titles.
All right.
That I feel like are the pinnacle of bad.
And are these films you saw in theaters?
Yeah, these are all the ones that I've seen in theaters. I did see a lot of bad stuff on at home as well, but I feel like the theater experience is really like it bumps it up a notch.
Yeah,
it can turn a really bad movie into a horrible experience. So. And
we should probably be clear here. This isn't necessarily a list of the very worst films of 2017. It's the list of the worst ones we saw. Because if you like look up on Rotten Tomatoes, like the worst reviewed films of 2017, they're mostly movies that I avoided and I didn't see in theaters because they looked bad.
Wait, you didn't see Emoji Movie?
No, you know, I didn't. I didn't catch that one. Sorry, TJ.
Can we
Miller.
Just like, yeah. Oh, TJ.
I know.
He's having a bad year. Yeah. Can we just put the poop emoji up like over my face while we're talking about this? Also, man. I came up with a term that I was thinking of about that the storm hitting the East Coast right now. It's called the bomb cyclone.
The bomb cyclone?
Bomb cyclone, yeah, that's what they're calling it. I don't know where they get it from, but yeah. That told is, you I had a cool name.
That is a cool name. That sounds like the carnival ride that when it came into town, I was too afraid to ride.
Oh yeah. That one cost five tickets to ride. So five tickets. Couldn't afford that one.
Yeah, I didn't get the unlimited wristband. Parents always said we couldn't afford that. So
you'll go on that big slide again with the burlap sacks
yeah, the potato sack that is absolutely nasty inside. So yeah, to be clear, most of these films I did pay a ticket to, so I was hoping for something, right? But of course, ended up not getting something, very enjoyable. So why don't you kick us off? What's number five on your list?
Yeah, number five for me, of all the movies I saw this year, number five was The Circle.
Oh!
Yes, we have a love-hate relationship with this movie on this brave little podcast.
It's my favorite. It's so...
I mean, if we're talking about it just as a movie-going experience, if we're taking it at face value, it's probably the worst movie overall that I've seen this year. But there are so many other things about it that kind of raise it above the worst status that I couldn't rightfully say it's the worst thing I've seen. It's the fifth worst thing that I saw this year. So The Circle starring who's in The Circle?
It's Emma Watson, Tom Hanks,
Emma Watson, there
Patton
you go.
Oswalt,
Elar, Bill Pullman,
L.R. Coltrane from Boyhood.
And Bill Pullman.
Bill Pullman, the president from Independence Day. No, it's got Bill Paxton in his swan song, his last film before he passed away suddenly, and which is both devastating and crazy. But I actually don't have The Circle on my list just because, well, one, I knew you had it on your list, so I bumped it from mine just to have a sake of a diverse list, to be totally candid. Yeah. But it's also like my favorite of the bad movies. Like, The five I'm going to list to you, I have like a deep dislike for. Like, they were just awful movies, and I had a bad experience watching them. But The Circle, I actually had a good experience watching it because I watched it with my three siblings, and it was just this moment of like discovery for us because we're all looking at each other as we're watching this thing, being like, this is with Emma Watson, this is with Tom Hanks, a bunch of other actors we like, and it is a train wreck. It was like being with my siblings watching a train wreck. It was memorable. It's something we'll never forget, but like a lot of people died, right? You know, and it
goes off the rails early.
It
too.
Does.
Like it's a movie that you're aware of how bad it is right off the bat.
Yeah.
So
no doubt.
The experience of watching The Circle, like I got basically halfway through it and then I just had like a reality check. Like, is this really as bad as I think it is?
Yeah.
And I turn to my wife and we just start laughing because it's terrible. I mean, it's a really, really bad, cheesy movie. So, yeah. I mean, she compared it to the movie from the 90s. I'm blanking on the name. Antitrust.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So she compared it to Antitrust.
Ryan Felipe and Tim Robbins.
And Tim Robbins, exactly. Wow. And Rachel, what's her, Rachel something? Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Antitrust was a terrible movie, and it was actually better than The Circle. So,
oh, no doubt about it. And admittedly, yeah. Antitrust was fairly popular in the Safra household circa 1997 or 98 or whatever.
It's because it's a PG-13 thriller. That's why.
Yeah. My number five is a movie I saw recently, and it's Pitch Perfect 3. And, you know,
wow.
I know. What am I to say? Look, I don't know. It was such a mess, and it's not like these are good, well-made films. They're musical. It's a film for the purpose of a cappella showcase to have a bunch of popular songs and be entertaining. But like the narrative is such a mess and so ridiculous and so over top that this one was particularly egregious. Like I was okay with this, how bad the second one was, because it was in the category of lovably bad. But this one was like, oh, this is just downright terrible. And I don't even want to talk about
it. What's the premise? What? Just real quick, like what's the premise of this third one?
So
they're just doing it again?
They're doing it again. Even though they graduated college, they're you know, they found a way to, you know, to go out on tour. There was a competition on this USO tour to play for the troops, and DJ Khaled is going to pick.
Awesome.
Yeah, no, and actually he is like the one really good thing, because he's aware in the whole movie. He's pretty aware that that he's a part of something terrible. And so he just kind of hams it up. But anyway, they find a look, the Bellas of Barton figure out a way to sing again. And it is what it is. You get some Rebel Wilson physical comedy in there. I guess that's worth something to some people. But like as a narrative, it's just a mess. And it's the fifth worst film I saw in 2017.
I'll be skipping that one.
Yeah,
so please. I don't think I'll ever watch that one.
What do you got? What do you got it for?
Number four for me was The Fate of the Furious.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No.
Fast 9,
Paul,
was it?
Though. What about Paul? Come on.
Well, I mean, if it had Paul, I would have liked it. Oh. It wouldn't have made the list.
So you don't like these movies, though, generally?
No, to be honest, I do not like any of these. I saw the last one, and I did get a little choked up at the end sequence when the two cars diverge on the highway.
Yeah.
Over the song. Yeah, I love that song. But this one was just like, I don't know, man. I don't know how to explain how bored I was in this. I mean, other than the fact that I fell asleep, which I did. Which is insane to me, because it was a packed theater, literally two rows behind me. There's a crying baby.
Oh,
there's people on their cell phones playing music. I don't even know what they're entertaining themselves during the movie. I don't blame them. It's not a good movie. So yeah, number four for me is The Fate of the Furious. Didn't like anything about it. So
yeah, I mean, it's not the best of the Fast and the Furious movies, but I enjoy them to an extent, and I enjoyed this one to a certain extent. But yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna go to bat for it.
I can't. Like, is there any way to defend that very first race? It's the stupidest
in Cuba.
Stupidest thing. In Cuba, yeah.
Oh yeah, dude. It's just Vin, you know, doing what it takes, winning a race going in reverse, which was incredible,
right,
with an engine that was completely
falling apart,
dismantled.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dude, that's stupid. Havana, though. I don't know if you've been there, but that's just how it is, you know?
Yeah, no.
But not even Charlize, for me, puts it over the top a little bit. I mean, she's
interesting. Yeah.
The Dreads? No?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I loved her in Atomic Blonde. That's definitely not on my worst list.
So number four for me is a film that I honestly don't even know. I know I saw it in theaters. I don't know why or how, but somehow Lindsay and I found ourselves in a theater watching Boss Baby. And... Like, I mean, I don't, I love Pixar animated films. Generally, like the other animated films, I don't really rush to go see. I'm thinking we must have been particularly desperate on a weekend to do something, or maybe we were giving it something free. I don't know. But I remember just sitting in the theater going like, what am I watching? Like, are all non-Pixar animated films this bad? But no, this one was just particularly egregious. In fact, the only value I got was, you know, we're in these reclining seats, and in the row across from us, the two parents that brought their three young children, the two parents were fully reclined and completely asleep. And I just watched the kids as they put popcorn all over the faces and mouth of their parents as they were sleeping and snoring, by the way. Like, they were full on snoring, but no one cared. I mean, it's not like, you know, they were ruining a film that people wanted to see. But Boss Baby, you're never going to be in a position where you're forced to watch this. But if you are...
If I'm on a plane and the only movie they're showing is Boss Baby, I'm stepping out. I don't care. I'm kicking open the emergency door and just
so
walking
bad.
Out of the plane.
Anyway.
That's awful.
Yeah, and I have three movies that were worse.
Hard to believe.
Yeah.
My number three is the movie Split.
Oh, yeah.
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 I mean, this was a movie that was actually had a little critical acclaim.
It did?
It did really well at the box office.
Well enough to get a sequel. Well,
And
film?
Yeah, exactly. A third in the trilogy. And we got the proclamations of M. Night Shyamalan being a genius again.
Yes. That's what's amazing here is M. Night has been just somehow he's been getting crap funded, just complete mm-hmm. crap for movies. And the whole world has understood that he's making crap. No one knows how right. he's getting the money to do it, but he's making crap. And then somewhere along the line, he makes this piece of crap Split. And then, but yet everyone decides, oh, he's back. This is
exactly.
Unbreakable M. Night Shyamalan. This is the Sixth he's Sense back. M. Night Shyamalan. It's like, whoa, no. Like,
I don't know what the difference between this is and The Village.
No.
I don't know. There's no quality difference
it might
whatsoever.
It might be worse.
Yeah, it very well could be. His cameo is worse.
I mean, we
talked about that.
Oh, my gosh.
And this is
bad.
His worst cameo by
gosh,
far.
He had a toupee, too, in the or some sort of wig. It was awful. Gosh, what a yeah. bad movie.
So number three for me was Split.
Well, yeah. Number three for me was a movie that I knew going in that had dangerously low Rotten Tomato scores. So I had to set my expectations low. But it starred Tom Cruise, which automatically gives it heightened expectations. And that is The Mummy, which is a film, talk about going off the rails at the beginning. This is a movie that is a mess. Tonally a mess. It's a mess with the pace. It's a mess with the story, trying to follow what's going on. Even the acting. It's just a really bizarre situation, too, because you're looking at it. You know, Universal, I believe, is trying to start this monster universe, and they make this grand announcement, right? That's what everyone wants to be doing, is creating a cinematic universe just like the Avengers or even the Star Wars films, or, you know, just creating all of these, having these solo films that build up to the film, the ensemble, where everyone gets together like the Avengers. And so this was supposed to be the launch of that, right? You have The Mummy, and then they're going to have Bride of Frankenstein and Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, and yada, yada, yada.
What about King Kong? Is King Kong?
I don't think he's in this monster universe. Loch Ness Monster was supposed to be. Anyway, okay. Dracula, I think. But this movie bombed, not just with critics, but financially. And they canceled all the plans to do the cinematic universe. And they should. This was a disaster. Russell Crowe and Tom Cruise, shame on both of you. I used to say all the time that Tom Cruise has never made a bad movie. And it's just not true anymore. So.
Well, I mean, had they cast Brendan Fraser, that's a different story.
Look, that's what I'm saying. Bring in Brendan Fraser and The Rock as yep. the Scorpion King, and I'm paying full price for that. Weekend, evening price.
That's your new franchise right there.
Oh, man.
So that was your number three, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so my number two was the much maligned Justice League.
Ooh. So I'm popping up Mikey Garland's comment.
Oh, there you go.
On our Facebook Live
Mikey
feed right
knows.
Now. He put Justice League as well, hands down, so incredibly terrible.
Mikey did not like it.
Also, that is also my number two. So,
well, yeah, we're in good company because Justice League was bad.
What was the peak bad moment? What was the lowest depth? Was it the zombie Superman sequence?
That's pretty bad.
Yeah,
but I would say the pinnacle of terrible was the CGI removal of the mustache of Superman. That's that whole handheld sequence is just, I mean, it doesn't get, that's the worst CGI I've seen all year.
Isn't it incredible?
By far. And it's in a huge blockbuster, which is just laughable.
Think about this though, because it's incredible for a lot of reasons. One, that the folks making Mission Impossible over at Paramount refused to allow Warner Brothers to have a clean shaven Henry Cavill. Like, they refused. That is just nothing but an FU move, because mm-hmm. mustaches can grow back relatively quickly, and they can
exactly.
also be faked pretty easily, a lot easier than removing it, clearly.
Way easier. And especially, I mean, we don't know how much of the movie had already been shot, right? But if he's already shot like 50% of the movie with that real mustache, you can totally fake a fake mustache.
Yeah.
You can blend it in. It's
absolutely.
Fine. It's not a big deal. But we saw firsthand how terrible it is to remove a mustache visually.
Yeah.
And that's like the opening sequence of the movie, basically. And I knew I was in for some trouble.
Isn't it
once
weird
I saw that happen?
That it would have been less jarring for Superman to have just come from the grave with a mustache. That actually would have been less jarring than the
yeah,
CGI
and I
removal.
Think they're... There, I think there was a Superman that had a mustache.
Why not?
I'm not a big like Superman fan, but I believe there was a version of him in the comic books where he had a mustache.
Well, clearly his chest hair grew in the grave. I mean,
oh yeah,
could have made a case that just the hair on his upper lip grew.
So bad.
Incredible.
So yeah, Justice League was number two for me. Really bad.
Yeah.
Awful.
Good thing they brought in Joss Whedon to save that movie, because you know.
Oh yeah.
Boy, it could have been
and,
a train wreck. So I mean, that's my number two as well.
Yeah.
And so I'll go with my number one and you can finish this off. But my number one is a film that I have such an exciting passion of hatred for it. It's a film that is absolutely shouldn't exist as a movie. It pandered to the worst kind of audience person. It was made in the worst way and under some scrutiny and some scandal. And that is A Dog's Purpose. This is a movie that's literal torture for dog lovers. It's just a movie about a dog that, you know, again, we did a whole episode on it, but the I did at least, I think I did a solo pod because there's no way I was going to make you and Skylar watch this awful, awful film. Especially you as a dog owner. I think Skylar hates dogs, but you
I couldn't handle it. No way. Yeah.
Skylar's a cat person, which should surprise no one, but, but this is a movie where like a bunch of people, you know, Hollywood writers got in a room and decided to make a movie that just featured like dogs that are in the subreddit, like the Aw subreddit on Reddit, you know, like just the cutest dogs. But they're like, how can we make a movie about a dog of, you know, of all the different breeds that people find cute? Like, how can we have him be a corgi and a golden retriever, you know, and
a pug, a Maltese.
Let's create a story where the dog's consciousness is the only thing that survives and the dog just dies over and over again and reincarnates. But the problem is of course, you're watching a movie then with a dog that just dies over and over again. And some of the most tragic sequences, like one, he gets left in a car. The dog gets left in the car on a hot day.
You gotta be kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding. That's one of the ways it goes. It just all of a sudden he reincarnates into a cute puppy, something else. And you're like, my poor wife, who was so excited to see it, she loves dogs more than any person I've ever met. I mean, true dog lover. Every single dog, you know, we come across, she has to approach. She was excited to see this movie, Dennis Quaid, you know. Of The Rookie, Disney's The Rookie, Flight of the Phoenix, Dennis Quaid. She's on the verge of tears because this is just a harrowing experience. And it's good to see. I'm getting some backup here from Michael Hyland, who sends three dog emojis. He agrees. Terrible.
I think one of those
film.
Is a cat. I believe one of those is a cat.
It's hard for me to tell. That's my worst. So
his post right there was actually better writing than you got in The Dog's Purpose. So
I mean, that was
congrats
and
on
the
that.
Emoji movie.
Exactly.
So before we get to your worst film that you saw in 2017, a comment from your significant other, Sarah Alvarado, Atomic Blonde, which you said was a movie you liked. Apparently, Sarah didn't.
Yeah, she didn't like it. She did not care for it. I will say when we went to go see that, that had the most walkouts I've ever seen in my life.
Atomic Blonde?
Atomic Blonde had.
Why?
I think the final count was 12.
What?
12 people walked out.
Was it like, it has, something has to be particularly egregious for that. Is it like really overly violent?
It is, but you knew that going into it. Like it's billed as the female John Wick, right?
Yeah, but no one walked out of John Wick.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that people just hate women. Especially Charlize Theron.
Yeah. So. Especially in this climate. Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that. 12 people walked out of a movie.
That's crazy.
I liked it. So.
All right. So.
So my wife doesn't know what she's talking about.
All right. Well, should I give you a drum roll for your number one?
Yes. Number one. In 2017, the worst movie I saw by far was The Great Wall. Starring Matt Damon. Several Chinese actors that I do not know their names, unfortunately. And one Willem Dafoe.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this movie is particularly bad. Mm-hmm. You know, after initially seeing it, I felt like I understood why it was made. And, you know, I thought I could understand why people would find it entertaining. But then thinking about it some more, it just kind of started to make me angry. And I hated it more.
I'm fully responsible for making you go see this film. I told you to go see it.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I like Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I will go see almost anything that he's in until this year. Oh, now, you know what? Subconsciously, that makes sense. Because I saw him in this movie, it made me not want to see him in the Suburbicon.
And downsizing. It's been a bad year for Matt Damon.
Except for Thor.
Yeah. My gosh. So. Wow. Taika saved him with his one good credit.
He certainly did. So yeah, The Great Wall is by far the worst movie I saw this year.
Michael,
no redeeming qualities.
Michael sharing a Matt Damon emoji.
Oh, that's perfect. Oh, I will say Willem Dafoe is actually the one redeeming quality.
Willem Dafoe. We will be reviewing the Florida Project on an episode here very shortly. And yeah. I may or may not be making a petition for him to, you know, win the Best Supporting Oscar, Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
Because he's absolutely deserving. But we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, so Great Wall is garbage. Don't go see it. You'll hate it if you even bother. If it's on TV, skip it. Watch something else.
Did huge in China.
It did. Made a ton of money.
Oh, yeah,
there.
You bet it did. So. And that's exactly why it was made. So.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny? I was on Box Office Mojo looking at all like the highest grosses for the year. And about maybe 10, nah, about 8 or 9 of the top 25 are they're Chinese or Indian movies. So. Wow. We got to find a way to review those movies, I think.
Yeah, well,
we're missing something.
The old theater that you and I worked at here in Folsom, it gets you know, several Bollywood films per year. I mean, it's pretty regular, actually. You know, if it's any decently sized Bollywood film, it'll have a few weeks of a run here, which is pretty interesting. But there's also
we should totally
large
do that.
Community here.
Yeah, we should definitely review one of these. Either Bollywood or Chinese movies.
I want to review the ones that are like getting controversial. Like, you know, we're like,
yeah.
Some of them, like the actresses are like getting like death threats and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because they hold hands on screen or something.
Yeah.
Because they let the male actor kiss their hand.
Yeah. I want to review those.
Before they're married. Yeah. That's good. Let's do that.
So let's transition from talking about the worst films that we saw. To a movie about what's widely considered to be the best worst movie of all time, and that's a movie called The Disaster Artist, which is a movie about The Room. This is going to sound so confusing as we describe it, but not long ago, on my route to Japan, Lindsay and I stayed for a couple of days in L.A., and you and Sarah were gracious enough to host us in your home, and
in this very room, by the way,
in the room you're in, that's where we slept. Great decor, by the way, and you kept it nice and warm and comfortable. Everything was just terrific. You and I went out and caught a late show of The Disaster Artist, which is something, a movie that you and I were excited to see. This was we definitely were in we were right in the wheelhouse of the audience for this film, because you and I read the book or listened, to the Audible of the book that this movie is based on. But for those who aren't familiar with The Room or who Tommy Wiseau is, do you want to give a little bit of background?
Yeah, basically Tommy is this guy of mysterious origin who one day decided that he wanted to write and direct and star in his own
big-budget
Hollywood
this
production.
This is all real life.
Yeah, he's a true person. So basically the story of if you haven't seen The Room, it's the story of a guy who, I guess his wife or his girlfriend cheats on him. And the story is like, the plot is completely convoluted and terrible, but it's very, very funny unintentionally. I think, I'm not sure. And there's a ton of just classic moments, and it's definitely worth watching. Go check it out.
Yeah.
You can buy it on The Room website. That's the only place you can find it. The Room official website.
So this guy, Tommy Wiseau, like you said, mysterious background. We don't know for sure where he's from. We don't know how old he is. And he spent $6 million making a movie based off a script that he wrote. Mind you, he's not a screenwriter. He is not a film director. No. We have no idea how he got this money. And he made
not
a
an
film.
Actor either.
What's that?
He's not an actor either.
He's not. But he just kind of took he somehow had the finances to make a movie, because frankly, he was never going to star in anything he was never going to make it in showbiz, never going to make it in Hollywood. But he's got the money to make his own movie, and he does. And it's a film that caught a major cult following. It's hard to get full copies of it. I think the only place to purchase it is through his website, although there is a Fathom event coming up here. I think this month, where they're actually screening it in theaters nationwide.
It's next week.
Oh, it's next week.
Opens next week.
Yeah. We'll catch that. But at the very least, go to YouTube and just watch a couple scenes, and you'll understand why this film has hit a cult status. People love watching this movie because it is so absurd and so over the top, and it was made in earnestness. And we're just not used to people who don't know what they're doing, having $6 million to make a movie, like not at this level, right? We're just not used to that. And so it created something that's weirdly endearing. Now, it's the crazy part here is that cult following has led it to be a profitable film. That's what that right. crazy $6 million budget actually proved to be a worthy gamble. And so much so that one of the stars and the friend of this mysterious Tommy Wiseau, Greg Sestero, wrote a book about the making of this movie, The Room. So James Franco optioned the rights, as well as Seth Rogen's, I think, Point Grey Productions. And they wanted to make a movie about the making of The Room. And so it is directed by James Franco. It's starring James Franco as Tommy Wiseau with some really good prosthetics. And in the role of Greg Sestero, you know, his friend and the author of the book is actually James's brother, Dave Franco. So it's the behind the scenes of this movie. So I want to know, what were your hopes and expectations going into it, having read the book, and what was your and I really want to know if you were ultimately satisfied.
Yeah. So if we're fans of the movie, obviously, mm-hmm. The Room. And then we were fans of the book. The book is incredible. I think if anyone has any interest in The Room, you need to read the book and you need to listen to the audiobook. Absolutely. Because it's narrated by Greg, and Greg does an amazing Tommy. Read the book. You're going to love the story. Having read that and having seen the Room multiple times, I came into this, the Disaster Artist movie, with high expectations because the source material is great. And I'm a firm believer in James Franco. I think James Franco is a great actor. I've always thought that since he was a young actor. His direction doesn't have a lot of experience behind the camera, but I figured he would be fine. So going into this movie, I definitely had high expectations. And upon watching it, I would say those expectations were met. It's a very entertaining movie. Anyone that's a fan of the movie, The Room, or the Franco brothers, or even Seth Rogen, you need to see this movie because it's first of all, it's funny. It's hilarious. Movie is very, very funny, which you wouldn't think it's necessarily, Tommy is a funny guy, but he is. Like, not only is his situation funny, he's legitimately funny in this movie. And I think that's because he is funny in real life, too.
Yes.
Just the experience beyond the humor is also interesting as well, because you see it's a story about perseverance, and it's a story about an underdog bucking the system, being told no at every turn, and just doing it himself, which is, the American way, basically, right?
Yeah.
So, it's a really, really great story, funny movie. They did a great job making this thing, and I think James Franco deserves for sure a Best Actor nomination,
yeah.
Maybe even a Best Director nom. At the Oscars. Maybe we'll see about that.
Win.
But I hope so.
I hope so too. Like,
yeah, he perfectly captures the essence of Tommy.
He really does.
It's amazing.
And this is
it's
the amazing. Thing that it would be so easy to go imitation or caricature. And the tricky thing here with this story, as well as his performance as Tommy, is that it could so easily turn into a making fun of or a joke. Because this is a film that got famous for being bad, right? Like, how do you make a movie about that without really poking at the subject? But I think they masterfully wrote the script, which was written by the guys that wrote 500 Days of Summer. I think it was a really, really great script. But they were able to balance this and not, it's a sincere, authentic portrayal while still being incredibly funny. So I saw this twice. I saw, twice in theaters, once with you and I think once on the opening night. And I was dying laughing. The theater I was with was loving it, especially on the opening night theater. It is a sincerely funny movie, but it treats its subject with respect, with the proper amount of respect. Never, ever kind of sinking to the level of imitation in caricature or anything that feels mean-spirited, which is really difficult to do because Tommy talks funny. He looks funny. He says funny things, he's not a normal person, right? Like, however we define that. He just says bizarre things. He acts...
He's completely unique.
Yeah, totally.
So, your first response would be to laugh at someone like that. And I think that where they really showed their skill in making this is not laughing at him, but obviously laughing with him. Because he has the funniest lines in the movie. It's, you can... Obviously, you can laugh at his three different leather belts that he wears.
Yes.
Or...
Yes. Yeah,
or his wraparound shades that he wears at midnight indoors. There's 100 things you can laugh at about him, But throughout the entire movie, you are laughing with him at all times because he has the best lines and he's super funny.
Oh, he's great.
So yeah,
they also they assembled an all-star cast that just
it's great.
I mean, it's obviously big names like Seth Rogen, James, and Dave Franco, but the surrounding characters they. I mean, Megan Mullally, you know, has a small bit part as Greg's mom in one scene, and she nails it. You got Josh Hutcherson in there. You have Nathan Fielder from Nathan for You.
Yes.
You know, in a terrific role. Bryan Cranston's in it in a great little bit. I mean, you have Academy Award nominated actress Jackie Weaver, who doesn't need to be doing this movie. She's barely in it, but she's perfect for the role. You know, it's just, I guess that's what you can get when you're Seth Rogen and James Franco is you can get, you know, whoever you want. But they got the right people. It's not just big names, but people who really kind of nailed it. Especially,
it's kind of funny. Like you mentioned the cast. Now, if Tommy had the resources to actually make The Room, he might use this exact cast that they got
absolutely
in this movie.
No, absolutely.
It's that good.
Absolutely. You know, it really is incredible. But it's, one feeling I had after it, which I didn't fully expect, is that I actually left the film inspired, like weirdly inspired. Like, yeah, I watched a movie about how these people made a movie and had no idea what they were doing, and the product turned out to be like really bad. But they also became famous, and the movie became profitable. And I saw like, you know, I saw two guys, the you know the James and Dave Franco characters, Greg Sestero and Tommy Wiseau, two guys that would never make it in Hollywood. Who said, you know, screw this. We're not going to leave our destiny in the hands of the people, you know, casting agents and other people. Like, we're just going to make our own movie. We'll create our own fame and make our own art, which I think there's a lot of people who do that. And I think it's super admirable and inspiring. But to see them do it against all odds, these characters like this, and succeed, it was just inspiring. It was weirdly heartwarming, but also hilarious. And so... It bums me out that it hasn't made more money. I mean, it's done great critically. It's 92% in Rotten Tomatoes. The critics love this film. Everyone I've talked to that's seen it has loved it. But I feel like, is it weirdly going to be like The Room? That is it going to be, will it find its audience later?
I think that's the case. It has to be. Because a lot of the people that watch The Room, they don't typically go out and watch movies in theaters. Yeah. They watch them at home.
Yeah.
So I think that's where it's really going to find its audience, hopefully, on demand and probably on cable as well. So
yeah.
Very, very, very funny movie. If it's playing near you, you really don't even need to know the backstory of Tommy or anything about The Room. Just go watch the movie.
Yeah.
You'll be entertained.
Totally.
And it'll probably inspire you to watch the Room itself to see what the real movie was like. So
yeah, Fathom event next
go
week.
Check it out.
Yeah. Are you going?
I'm going. I'm absolutely going.
Yeah. Oh, we got a comment came in right at the last second here from Chase Gondon. Sounds like something Dave would do. And I think he's referring to me making The Room.
Right.
And then he writes Thug Life. Little backstory here. Chase, good old childhood friend of mine since kindergarten. When we were freshmen in high school, my first completed film I ever made was a film that I really wanted to tell, kind of a gritty story about the streets of Folsom, California, which I
did. Oh, yeah. The dark streets of Folsom.
Yeah, which were immortalized in a film called Thug Life. And Chase plays one of those characters. He plays the father of Lil Bit, which was one of the gangster rappers who was also a drug dealer. I was 14 years old. And I'm still waiting for my Room moment. I'm still waiting to, you know,
right,
to make back my money on all those fake drugs that we made with flour and packs to make it look like cocaine.
Sure. Well, you didn't choose the Skux life. The Skux life chose you. So now, can we find Thug Life online at the official website?
Oh, no. Like the Room? Don't go to Thug Life online. I definitely don't own that URL, and I cannot vouch for whatever content's on there. But I'll tell you, I think it's somewhere on Facebook, and maybe I'll make it publicly available. I think I've given up on any hope of running for any type of political office in my life. So I think I can make, you know, I can have this go out and have people.
Please do. Yeah.
So. But anyway, that's The Disaster Artist. Anything else you want to hit on?
No, I think we touched all the bases on that one. It's a really good movie. Go see it. You will be entertained.
Yeah, absolutely. So We'll have a couple episodes coming up here pretty soon. We'll release anyone that's watching this on Facebook. This comes out in podcast form as well on iTunes. If you look up Brave Little Podcast, you can download and listen to it on your commute or while you're working or while you're working out or whatever you're doing. And so
while you're reading a book like The Disaster
just
Artist.
Just like The Disaster Artist. We're going to do an episode right after this. I think just probably audio only. So not on Facebook Live. And we're going to hit on a review of Good Time, The Florida Project, and a documentary called The Work. And then shortly after that, this weekend, we were recording our top 10 films of 2017 with Skylar in Dallas, who will be joining us. So I think we're recording that on Sunday. So hopefully we'll be releasing it by Monday morning. There's usually pretty long. It's two-parter episodes. So hopefully the first part of the week, we'll see that coming out. And find us on Twitter or comment here on Facebook with your top 10. And if you do, we'll read it out and talk about it on the pod. But all right, man. Thanks, Aaron.
Thanks to you, sir.
As we say, hold on to your butts.
Thank you for listening to the Brave Little Podcast. Hold on to your butts.